You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. Hey, Preppers and Patriots. The special edition broadcast of the Prepper Recon Podcast is my recent appearance on the Prepper Website Podcast with Todd Sepulveda. Enjoy the show.
All right, Mark. Hey, I am so glad that you are back on the Prepper Website Podcast. How are you?
Todd, I'm great, and it's so good to be back on. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, I was looking back at the archives, and you were on episode 103. Actually, that was a two-parter, right? Episode 103 and 104 back in July 2017. I listened to a little bit of that, and if anyone is interested in listening to that episode, I'm going to link to it in the show notes, and so you can go check it out. Mark shares a lot of his background, and you know, we get into a lot of that. But back then, your wife was pregnant. So tell us, you know, by now, definitely, you know, you're a father. Tell us what it's like, man.
Oh, wow. That was so long ago. So right now, yeah, our baby's, she's got all her teeth except the back molars, and those are coming in now. So that's great fun. But yeah, seems like eons ago now, being a father and thinking back to those times. But yeah, it's a real joy, and she's just smart as a whip, and she helps me build fires in the fireplace, and she's just she picks up on stuff really, really good, and I think she's gonna be a great prepper.
Does she have you wrapped around her finger yet?
Absolutely. when she points at the computer and says bye bye, I know that it's time to go put the bye bye black sheep video on, and we're going to be watching that for the next 20-30 minutes.
That's great, man. That's great. Well, you know, you've got a kid, and so your whole focus on preparedness is a little bit changed now, right? I've got kids. And for me, when I prep, that's one of the things that I think about. I think about my family. I think about my wife, my kids, and my extended family, and all of that. And so I really wanted to talk about this new book that you just came out with, Rise of the Locust. And it's part book one of Cyber Armageddon. I love the fact that you always do series, because I just love to follow characters in a series. But in this book, you know, the main character, Kate McCarthy, she's got a family with kids, and man, it's so interesting. But the whole premise of it is around this cyber Armageddon, right? This cybersecurity threat. When I first saw it, I was like, that really resonated with me, because a lot of people know that listen to the podcast. They know that I work in education, and that has become a really big deal for educators, is making sure that our networks are secure, that students' information is secure. So I'm just curious, out of all the scenarios that you could have possibly written about, you know, this new book, why did you choose cybersecurity, you know, from your standpoint?
Well, it's certainly one of the threats that I think is often overlooked. You don't see a whole lot of prepper books about it. You know, EMP and CME are the big ones, and those are really, really catastrophic. And I think everything goes away. We're instantly plunged back into the 1800s. But I'm not sure that a cyber Armageddon, if it was executed properly, couldn't be almost as catastrophic as that. If we lost our ability for commerce, you know, that's it. You have no way of trading. Then whatever food you've got in the refrigerator at the time, that's all you have. And you know, you talked about prepping with kids. As a father, Todd, what wouldn't you do to make sure those kids had food in their stomachs when they're saying, "Dad, I'm hungry. Dad, how are we going to eat? You know, my belly hurts." You know, as a father, you think about those words, and you think about hearing your children say that to you, and that's heart-wrenching stuff right there. And that's the type of thing that will push people that are normally decent, good human beings to go out and do things that they would have never fathomed doing before. And, you know, it's so much easier to just be prepared and have the things on hand that you're going to need to get your family by without having to resort to those unthinkable tasks.
Man, it's interesting that you say that, because I say the same thing. You know, you don't want your kids looking at you in a time, in an emergency crisis, looking at you, because you're going to be the one that they have always come to for the answers. And so, you know, like you said, there's all this crisis is going on. Kids can feel it. They know when parents are stressed out. They know when things are going on. And so, you know, this crisis is going on. They're going to be looking to you, and you want to be able to at least feel comfortable to say, hey guys, you know what, we've got food, we've got water, we've got a means to defend ourselves, you know, we're okay for the time being. And how important would that be for fathers and for mothers and parents to be able to, and grandparents, right? I know a lot, I've heard just because of the podcast from a lot of people who are preparing for their kids and their grandkids, because their kids aren't really looking into this and seeing how important this threat is, you know, and whatever threat is out there, because our world is so fragile. So when you started writing about cybersecurity, did you just start writing, or did you, you know, how much research did you do about this topic?
I watched hours and hours and hours of video. There's one of the conventions that I mentioned in the book. It's called DEF CON, and they've been around for more than a couple of decades now. And their primary focus is cybersecurity, hacking, and that sort of thing. And every year they have a conference out in Las Vegas, and all the computer nerds that are into hacking and that sort of thing, they all go to that conference. And most of those talks are up on YouTube, and you can just sit and geek out and watch that stuff for hours. But you know, if you're not researching a book, and that's not something you want to do, you know, there's a movie called Zero Days that's about the Stuxnet virus. And that's a really, really good primer for cyber vulnerabilities. If you want to learn about how vulnerable we are, of course, Ted Koppel, he's, you know, probably a little further on the left than most of the folks we typically follow, but he wrote Lights Out, and you know, his premise is that Russia and China they're already in all of the SCADA systems controlling a lot of the U.S. infrastructure. And of course, one of the things we learned from Stuxnet is that the abilities for cyber attack goes far beyond the ability to just lock somebody out of their computer or erase data. But of course, in the information age that we live in, erasing data or locking somebody out of their computer altogether, encrypting all of their information, that can be very, very catastrophic. But Stuxnet showed us that you can cause physical harm to infrastructure and machinery. One of the things that the Stuxnet virus did to the Iranian centrifuges in their plutonium enrichment plant is it caused those centrifuges to spin out of control, to overheat, and to basically burn them out. So they actually damaged the equipment, and it put Iran back years and years on their nuclear enrichment program. So it's not just you know, messing up somebody's data. It can actually cause physical harm to the infrastructure. So that could be deployed against hydroelectric dams. It could be deployed against nuclear power plants, reducing stations, transformers. They could be hit with surges. There's a lot of stuff that can actually be done to cause physical damage by a cyber attack.
And all of that is because everything is tied to the internet, right?
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, it is, but Stuxnet, the Iranian centrifuges that were attacked by Stuxnet were actually air-gapped. So that means that Everything in that facility is completely offline. It's nothing in there is connected to the internet. So what happened is that whoever, and this is the other thing about cyber, is there's never a smoking gun. You know, if and of course we've now re-entered the Cold War with Russia, and there's all of this rhetoric about who's got the fastest hypersonic missiles and all of that. You know, Putin was out threatening with his submarine based launched hypersonic missiles. He was talking about that last week. You know, they're a Vanguard, supposedly travels at Mach 27, which, you know, Mach is the speed of sound. So Mach 27 is 27 times the speed of sound. So I think that's somewhere in the vicinity of 20,000 miles an hour. Of course, our Trident D5s, I think they do Mach 24. So I don't think there's any kind of a defense system that's going to stop a missile cruising at Mach 20, much less Mach 24, Mach 27. So, you know, but with that, you've got mutually assured destruction. And, you know, if I, and you know exactly what the origin of that attack is. So if Russia launches missiles at us, we're going to launch all our missiles at them, and there's just going to be no more Earth. It's a little different with cyber because you don't know exactly where that attack came from. And so there's a lot of speculation that would say the NSA and Israeli Mossad are the ones that developed this program to attack these Iranian centrifuges, but you never really have a smoking gun. So what they did is they made made just millions and millions of copies of Stuxnet, and they were just dumping it on any kind of machine that they could get it on. And the virus was just spreading from machine to machine to machine. And it ended up getting in one of the service companies that did like some diagnostics on their maybe on their air conditioning equipment or something like that. And so they came into the facility and infected one machine in the facility. And then when the virus finally found the hardware that it was supposed to attack, then it activated. So they weren't even online. They were completely air-gapped away from the internet. Nobody in there had internet access. It was not any way wired to the World Wide Web, but just from one computer infecting the next to the next to the next to the next, infecting flash drives and just jumping from machine to machine to machine. It eventually got to the target that it was written for, and took out their basically their entire nuclear program. And this is years and years ago, Todd. So
right,
this is just what we know about. So there's so many things that we don't know about. The NSA hacking tools that were leaked. I guess they were leaked about 3 years ago, and then somebody, once again, a lot of speculation that says it was Russia, developed those tools into the WannaCry virus, which hit last year and disrupted auto manufacturing in Europe. It shut down the entire healthcare system for the United Kingdom. It shut down FedEx shipping. It shut down telecommunications in Spain. There were several banks in Russia that were hit. Of course, you know, if Russia wrote the program, why would banks in Russia get hit unless it's something to just say, hey, look, you know, we were affected by it too, so obviously it couldn't have been us.
Right.
So, you know, you just don't know. And we don't really know what else was leaked from the NSA, shuffled around, sold off by the shadow broker. So we don't know what kind of vulnerabilities are even out there, because, you know, the folks over at Fort Meade, they don't really have a reputation for transparency when they have accidents and they get hacked and they have leaks, we don't really hear about it until after the fact. So,
but the thing is that there could be viruses, there could be malicious software on a lot of our infrastructure software already, right? Just kind of just waiting.
Well, that's Ted Koppel's premise, is it's already there. That at you know, if things were to escalate between us and Russia, which they are escalating, they could shut down our grid tomorrow.
Wow.
And, yeah. I mean it's a real dry read. I'm going to be honest, I could not get through his book, you know, but if you're a technical person and you like reading technical manuals it'll tell you what the threat is and how real it is, and it'll tell you that it's already been hacked. The virus is already there. The reason the lights are still on is because they just don't have the motive to turn them off.
It hasn't been activated.
But there's nothing. It has nothing to do with ability.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I'm glad you said that about the book, because I was real close to buying it the other day and on Audible. So I'm really glad that I didn't do that after hearing you say that it was really dry, because it would be hard to go from listening to, like, you know, like your book, and then going into a really dry book. So, but listen, after you did all this research and you watched the videos and you're writing about this, did any of your thoughts and ideas change about your cybersecurity and about the way that you're doing things?
I don't know if it changed the way I do things a whole lot. One of the things it did do is it did help me understand how worried people in the know are. There's this misconception that I think a lot of people have that says the government's got everything under control. And that's not true. When you get into the cybersecurity field, especially within government, those people either have a profound faith in God or they're on some type of anxiety medication, because otherwise they just wouldn't be sleeping at night. I mean, it's that bad, and that's just the common knowledge. That's just what they live with. You know, it's for everybody else, it's ignorance is bliss, and I don't think that people understand that so much. People are, you know, it, like I said, more or less the common misconception is that whatever it is, the government can protect us from it, and they've got all this under control. They don't have it under control. They know they don't have it under control, and they are, they're just white in the face from fear over this.
Yeah, because everybody is vulnerable. I mean, when you break it down the way you're breaking it down, and you don't even know when the attack can come. I mean, just like you said, right? You see the missiles coming, although they would be coming so fast. But in something like this, man, it could just be sparked just because of some, you know, code that, or some trigger that is sent for whatever reason. So, that I can see where that would freak a lot of people out. You know, my coworker was contacted by our security team, and I don't know if it was just a random thing, but they found her email on the dark web. And so they called her, and she was a little concerned, and they're like, hey, look, we found your email, and things that you were doing maybe at work, like if you were checking your bank statements or you were paying bills or whatever you were doing, you need to make sure that you go and you change all of that information, because that your information right now is, at least your email and probably more, is out there on the dark web somewhere. And yeah, people, I mean, that's probably things that people haven't even heard about, you know, talking about that.
Right. Yeah. Even down to the title of the book, Cyber Armageddon, I didn't come up with that term. That's, you know, James Clapper came up with that term. I'm not a big James Clapper fan after he told Congress, lied bold-faced to them, and said that the NSA is not collecting data on American citizens, you know. But when he says that, that cyber Armageddon is a very, very real threat and people need to pay attention to be ready for it, I do believe him on that, because he's one of those people that's in the know that understands how bad this threat is.
Yeah. Okay. So the, with this threat being so bad and you having the knowledge that you have, and, you know, people that are listening to this podcast, some of them might not even think it's that big of a deal, right? I mean, they go to Facebook, they go to Pinterest, they're doing email, maybe they're even doing, you know, their bank. Actually, just recently, I read an article by Martin Armstrong that said you should have one computer that all you do is your banking on, and another computer for everything else. So do not mix them all together. You know, so I thought that was interesting coming from him. But if you were talking to someone who just didn't have any clue about the cybersecurity or how big it could be or how bad it could get, and, you know, they're just, you know, you're a regular person, what kinds of things, what kind of takeaways would you want to tell them about cybersecurity and maybe what they're doing online?
Well, I think that's probably a very good tip that Martin Armstrong gave. I don't know how realistic it is. I don't know how many people are going to go buy another computer. Most people won't even, you know, put their password as anything other than their pet's name or their kid's birthday. So I think it's unlikely a lot of people are going to go buy a dedicated machine simply for banking. I use Kaspersky. Number one, because it was one of their techs that found Stuxnet, and number two, because nobody in the U.S. government will use it. So that makes me think, you know, they don't want, you know, anybody at the Pentagon, they're not allowed to have Kaspersky. The official story is because they think that it's a Russian program, and the Russians could be using it to spy on them. Maybe that's the case. I don't think if that is the case, they're not going to be trying to hack my bank account. Putin's not, because I don't have enough money to interest him. You know, I think that they've probably – they're one of the top-rated
antiviruses.
Yeah. Yes, they are. And the program comes with a – it opens up a separate – secured window for banking and, you know, making online purchases and things like that. So, I think it's a very comprehensive program. I like that. I don't trust that. I don't trust my entire livelihood to that. I think that it makes a lot of sense to keep a good portion of, especially if you've got, everybody should have emergency fund. I'll make a quick plug real quick. If you go to Prepper Recon and click the banner at the very top of the page that says free PDF, get my 7-step survival plan. In that, I talk about, you know, prioritizing your preparedness. And one of the top things I talk about is financial preparedness. And in that, I think that you need to have an emergency fund. And I think it makes sense with what we're talking about here, to keep that outside of the banking system. I don't think you should keep all of your money outside of the banking system, because that's got its own set of risks. You know, you can have a home invasion. You could be burglarized, broken into. Even if you're keeping it in a safe, you know, they can come in with a jackhammer and pull your safe out of the house. So you should never have all your eggs in one basket. You know, that's just common sense. But you should have some portion of it, a significant portion of it, outside of the banking system. So I think that's a really, really good first starter. But besides that, it's just everything else that you need to prepare for everything from a financial collapse to the zombie apocalypse. And that's food, water, security, and shelter.
Right. Okay. So it's, you know, no matter what kind of topic or scenario we're talking about, it always goes back to the basics, man. Have those basics, and you know, you need to make sure that you have a plan and you're working that plan. What would you say to someone that that reads your book or listens to your book on Audible and completely freaks out and says, I am going to do away with all my devices and all my computers and my internet and all of that. I'm just doing away with it. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that then you're just trying to circumvent Cyber Armageddon by creating your own Cyber Armageddon. So I don't know if that's some people, that may be your reaction, and you just say, okay, I'm just going to learn to get along without it before I have to learn to get along without it. Well, that's not how I deal with problems. I'd rather, you know, try to mitigate things and make them to where they're less severe, where I'm less dependent on things. But, I depend on technology for my day-to-day life, for banking, and for my job, for uploading, you know, books to Amazon. If Amazon goes down, then that's pretty much the I'm going to have to find another means of livelihood. So I always think about that, and I try to have a plan for that, because I understand that is something that can happen. But I'm not going to circumvent Cyber Armageddon by creating my own Cyber Armageddon.
Yeah, we talked about this today in one of my meetings, that everything is so tied now, you know, with technology, that it would be very hard not to get along, you know, something as simple as, or, you know, banking, but even, paying bills and things like that, you know,
you can't even forward your mail without a credit card. If you want to forward your mail, the way they prove that it's you forwarding your mail is by charging you $1.05 to forward your mail on a credit card with your name on it. So, yeah, it's pretty impossible to get by. I mean, I'm sure you could do it, but you'd be functioning at a suboptimal level.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I've always mentioned is you don't want fear to be driving your life. And if you manage to do that, then fear, you know, has the best of you there. And you don't want to do that. I mean, some people will never go out of town and go on vacation because they're afraid that there's going to be an EMP, or they'd be away from their preps and different things like that. And you can't live like that, you know. Right. You got to be able to live life. So we've talked a little bit about the banking, or, you know, money and banking system and all of that stuff. In your book, you know, the cybersecurity threat hits through the banking system. So how much of a possibility is this in reality?
It's possible. I will say that I think that the banking industry, because they are attacked so regularly by low-level criminals that you know, I forget who it was that said, the reason I rob banks is because that's where the money is, you know. Yeah, so they attack banks because that's where the money is. So banks have to have a higher level of defense set up for cyber attacks than a lot of other industries. So I think that they're maybe a little bit more prepared. But if we lose our ability for banking and commerce, then that is very, very catastrophic, and it's on the level of an EMP, because I think I mentioned it before in our conversation. Without commerce, you're stuck with whatever's in your refrigerator.
Right. So I guess, in your research, did you find that banks are really, you know, what are they doing to guard against this kind of threat? I mean, in the book, the main character, you know, Kate McCarthy, is kind of over this humongous team. I mean, the way that I imagine it, you know, in the book, of course, I'm listening to it, right? And the way that I'm imagining it, you know, there's this big, you know, or this elevated platform where she's kind of watching everything, and a bunch of servers and people, you know, watching computers and transactions and all of this kind of stuff. Is that the way, I mean, your research, is that the way it is, or is that more, you know, kind of derived for the book? You know, or is there something in place specific that banks are doing that?
I've had a couple of readers that work in the IT space and the IS space that have emailed me and said, yeah, that's a fairly accurate description of what a control room, IS control room looks like for, you know, the larger banks. So yeah, that's basically what they're doing. And that's basically why we have a banking system at all right now.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's good.
And you know, and they have to get, they have to be on point every single day and they can't miss once. If they miss once, you know, that could be it. You think about all of the Bitcoin, exchanges that have been hacked and, you know, millions and billions of dollars that have been siphoned off because they're not regulated and, you know, and they don't have to have certain measures in place. Just a couple of weeks ago, one of the larger exchanges that, that had offline storage, the one person that had the password for everybody's money died.
Yeah,
and nobody else has
that,
the password.
Yeah. Yep.
And so
yep.
all that value and all those Bitcoins is gone. So
yeah, that's crazy.
I think those exchange hacks and all the money that's been stolen in Bitcoin is one of the reasons that it's probably not a lot stronger as an alternative currency than what it is.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of Martin Armstrong. I read a lot of his stuff. One of the things he always says is that the powers that be are not going to allow that. They're going to control that in one way or the other because they're going to want their cut of it. And so at some point, you know, there's going to be a way that will be controlled as well because they just can't allow it to continue on and not have some kind of control over it. So, you know, but yeah, that's funny that you said that. I said the same exact thing here recently talking about that that one cryptocurrency that kind of the guy died and he died with the password and that's kind of just left it all. You know, when I was listening to your book, I was thinking back, Michael Schneider, who runs the Economic Collapse blog, he wrote a book a while back. And one of the things about the book is, you know, it was the banking, something happened with the banking industry, but those that, and it wasn't like a complete collapse as far as people not being able to go to the bank. It was more like a reset. And those that didn't have hard paper copies of their balances, you know, that couldn't go to the bank and say, wait a minute, on this day, I had a balance of this, right? Then they completely lost everything. Do you recommend that people ask their banks to send them paper copies?
I don't think that's realistic. I don't think they would accept anything like that. I think if it's gone, it's just going to be gone. I don't think they're going to give you anything back. That's just not how they operate.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I remember. It's just like everybody's gone paperless. And if there was ever kind of like things were wiped out, I mean, you would have nothing if you weren't downloading or printing out stuff on your own or, you know, you had any kind of records at all. But
if I'm Jamie Dimon and you bring me your statement from yesterday that shows you put $5.6 million in your account yesterday, right before close, and then the banks went dark this morning at 8:59, right before we opened. I'm going to say, no, I'm sorry, because I don't have any way to prove that you didn't make some sort of a electronic funds transfer in the middle of the night and ship all that money over to, you know, some bank in Hong Kong.
Yeah, true.
I'm not going to give you anything. Because that's just the nature of how those people think and operate, and they're not going to trust you, and they're not going to accept a piece of paper that's unverifiable by their own system, even though their system no longer exists. And if they've got anything, they're going to sit on it and they're going to keep it and they're going to use it for their own resources.
True.
I don't even think I would expend any time or energy in trying to collect those, keep up with those. Like I said, the best thing you can do is, keep a nice little chunk of change outside of the system altogether. I don't think dollars are going to be worth much for long, but in the initial stages of any type of catastrophic thing where you no longer have access to currency, whether it's an EMP or a CME or a massive cyber attack against the banking system, dollars are going to be king for, the first few days. Of course, you're going to have to deal with the chaos of the streets and risk getting shot in the head to go out and spend it. But, if there's something that you forgot that now you realize you should have bought, maybe you'd still have that option for the first week or two.
Yeah. So did you think about when you were writing this book, did you think about possibly the cyber threat coming in any other way other than the banking system? Did you consider, like you were talking about, the nuclear or the hydroelectric plants or anything like that? Or did you just go straight to the banking?
Yeah, well, that's book one, is the banking system. And then there's two more books. So, yeah, you can't really call it cyber Armageddon. And it was just the one cyber attack. And then there's three more books called Cyber Armageddon. And nothing happens as far as computer viruses. So, yeah. So there's more stuff to come.
More stuff to come. So yeah. you got us looking up.
More thrilling apocalyptic chaos.
Oh, man. All right. Looking forward to that. So, in the book, there was a few pieces of information the public had, including one, the one whistleblower that he gets on CNN, right, and all that stuff, or he gets on the news. I don't know if it's CNN or not, but he's a whistleblower. There's little bits of information that could have tipped off people that were paying close attention. Now, I would say like preppers that are paying very close attention that something was about to happen or something was happening. What would you, if you were someone looking at the news or the alternative news or, looking at all that kind of stuff, what would you be looking for in real life?
Well, I watch out for, stories about things like the WannaCry virus and, of course, the root cause of that, which was the NSA tools that were leaked and obtained by the shadow brokers, which is, one of those dark web entities that will sell these tools to the highest bidder. And like I said before, we don't know what else they got. We don't know what else they made a lot of the stuff, most of those tools, the Eternal Blue and Double Pulsar, which were the Windows-based vulnerabilities that were made public. Those were basically sort of a proof to say, hey, we've got these tools that were developed by the NSA, and we're going to give away these two things for free just to prove to everybody else out there that we've got more stuff and we're taking bids on that stuff. We don't know what those other things that were sold off are. This stuff could be out there right now. So, we've kind of already had that. We've already had that whistleblower. We already know that it's out there. And, I think it was Janet Napolitano is the one that coined the term cyber 9/11. So, and of course that's in reference to September 11th, 2001, right before, when the World Trade Center was hit. On September 10th, it was business as usual. So we could literally be on the eve of cyber Armageddon as we're recording this podcast, as you're listening to it, folks in the audience. There's no guarantee that you have tomorrow. This is something that could happen tonight. It's something that could catastrophically change the world tomorrow in a much bigger way than 9/11 ever did. So that news has already been put out there. And it's something that, like I said, James Clapper, Janet Napolitano, people that are in the know have already, Ted Koppel, have already sounded the alarm to say, hey, this is something that could happen tomorrow that could change everything about the world that we know. So I think we've already had that warning, and I think that folks that have listened have already heard it, and so we should have already been started taking the action steps that you need to do to get prepared for this.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I think, and I know that we could go off on this topic and just kind of chase this rabbit, and I don't really want to, but just for the sake of the listeners that are out there, I think that we are in a situation right now where people feel so comfortable that things are so good right now. You know, the good times are here again, and I've just seen it in the preparedness space where people are kind of backing off and like, you know, people have been talking about all this bad stuff happening and it's never happened, and the Dow and all this kind of stuff, the stock market. But you know what? You know, Donald Trump is making everything great again, and so we have nothing to worry about. And because of that, there's going to be so many people that even that they knew that they should be prepared, but because they're not seeing it right now, or at least they're not seeing it, they're not wanting to see it, how fragile we are, then they've kind of pulled back and stopped. And to me, that's one of the scariest things, that people are out there that just think that things are fine, you know, when things are just, you know, it's kind of scary, really scary. When you were in the book, when you were talking about the things that were released in, you know, the, what did you call them? The shadow brokers.
When the NSA, tools, hacking tools that were leaked to the shadow brokers.
Right. Yeah.
That's all real stuff. That's all, from actual news headlines.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's
real
great.
World.
Yeah. Because you go into a lot, you go into more detail than you've done definitely here in the podcast, talking about this in Stuxnet and all that kind of stuff. But when during the Audible book, when I was listening to it, and you hear the, okay, hey, these two tools were given away free, but there's more, that kind of sent a little chill down my back, man. You know, it's like, wow, there's more stuff out there that, you know, here's just two things that we're going to give free. You know, this is just this is just a primer to let you know what's out there. There's the nasty stuff is still to come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. And these are, like I said, these are the tools that were developed by the best in the business. And, you know, we've all paid for the research and development of them. And if the NSA can be hacked and those tools can be stolen, you know, do you think that the banks are secure?
No. Yeah.
Because they're the best of the best, and they were compromised, whether it was human, you know, human error, whether it was somebody that was disgruntled that leaked that stuff or whatever. That can happen at a bank. You can have a disgruntled employee that works in the IS control center that deliberately shoves a flash drive into the mainframe and cripples the system, because they're all online with all the electronic transfer systems and doing business with each other, and they've all got backdoor access from one bank to the other. So if you get in one bank, you're in all of them.
Well, in reality, you know, I know that all the banks in your book were affected, but in reality, you only really have to mess with one big bank to have people panic and cause a run on the banks and freaking out. And it might stabilize or whatever, but when people realize, hey, I can go to my online banking and my bank is good, but, you know, it's enough to cause panic and get people acting crazy and stuff. So, man, yeah, it's so fragile out there in so many ways. We're just talking about one little way that it can be fragile. So let's talk a little bit about preparedness. So the character, I love the character, Kate McCarthy. But you know, the security analyst, you know, she finds herself having to prepare, and she gets these little, you know, these little, I don't know, things inside of her. It's like, hey, I need to prepare. I need to go get this. I need to get that. And she really has no real insight how to get started. You know, she lucks out because she goes to a store where there's someone who is, you know, giving her information and, hey, you need to, have you thought about this and have you thought about that and all that kind of stuff. When you looked at her character, or when you were building her character, did you pattern that character after someone?
No, not after anybody specific, just sort of after somebody that, because of their station in life, they get a little insight into this world global structural change that's getting ready to happen, and realize that, you know, I'm not going to be able to go to the grocery store after all of this happens. I'm not going to be able to go to the ATM, and my credit cards aren't going to work. What does that mean? And how am I going to survive without those things?
Yeah. So, I mean, someone who has a little bit of logic behind them can start making, you know, making those connections there. So, you know, in your opinion, what does it take for someone? I mean, I know the book, we have the book. There's definitely people that are, you know, I've talked about your book already plenty on the podcast. So I know that there's listeners who have already downloaded and read the book and stuff like that. But in your opinion, right, what does it take for someone to make that jump from a non-believer in preparedness to a believer?
Just a grain of common sense. Either you could either have an understanding of history to look at the catastrophic events in history that have shoved the globe into total and complete and utter upheaval, or you could have a, you know, just the slimmest understanding of the vulnerability of hyper complex systems such as the society that we live in, particularly in the United States. When you go to a third world country, they're much more able to deal with crises than we are. Even developing nations, you know, or so to speak, second world countries like Venezuela right now, where they're killing each other over food, you know. But this has been going on for a couple of years. America would have suffered a 90% die off by the time we would have dealt with the things that's been going on in Venezuela for 2 years. You know, we would be in nowhere near as good of a shape as they're in. But you know, they're in bad shape, and that's an economic collapse, and that's socialism, and that's what that brings about. So you could either have an understanding of history, you could have a understanding of the present, or you can have an understanding of the future of, you know, the things that the, prophetic things that the Bible said about, you know, what happens to nations that turn their back on God. If you've ever read the Bible cover to cover, you'd have a pretty good idea of where America's going. So basically anybody that wants to pull their head out of the sand for 5 minutes and look around, past, present, or future, should be awake to the things we're talking about right here, Todd.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So in the books that you've read, or you've written, excuse me, the books that you've written, they're so, you know, you've got so many different scenarios, and you've, you know, I'm sure you've thought about all these different scenarios over and over again. You've done research. You know, what is, when you think about this, how long do you think, and I know that this is just opinion, right? I don't know, maybe you've come up on some research of people that have done some real analysis to this, but how long do you believe it would take for things to really break down? I mean, in your opinion, or if you've done any research where you've come across some real hard analysis, you know, are we talking about 24 hours? Are we talking about a day? You know, what do you think out there?
I think there's a little bit of a sliding scale, and it's going to be very different depending on your locality. I watched LA 92 not too long ago, which was a documentary about the LA riots and, you know, just how fast things broke down there. And of course, what happened in LA is that the police became overwhelmed, and they were no longer able to deal with the situation. They had to pull back. Once that thin blue line goes back, we've got just a thick enough blue line to hold the animals back to keep society functioning as it is right now. But that's with no extenuating circumstances. Once you pour that onto the equation, and things start to bubble over, and those folks are no longer able to do their job, things get really bad in a hurry. So I think in really highly volatile cities like New York, Atlanta, Chicago, and LA, I think you'd have 6 hours, certainly less than 12 hours. In cities where things are more stable, smaller cities, things where you don't have so much racial animosity already. It's not already such a powder keg, and people aren't already just sort of living on the edge of desperation. You might have 24 hours, and then as you get out into the more rural areas, you might have more like 48 to 72 hours. The best plan is to be fully prepared, and when the balloon goes up, don't leave your house, you know, unless you're going to a bug out property, and then you want to be one of the first people on the road, because I live in Florida and I've had to evacuate more than once from here. I don't live here full time. I don't live in Florida full time anymore, but we've certainly done our share of hurricane evacuations, and you certainly want to be one of the first people on the road. Otherwise, you're just going to be in gridlock traffic, and if people are desperate and doing desperate things, that's a really bad place to be. And then I think that you're going to have – the intensity is going to be different depending on whether you're in a really population-dense area or not. And when I say intensity, you know, you can measure that by several different factors. Maybe one of the easier things to measure it, one of the easier factors of intensity we could look at would be like something like maybe like cannibalism, which that always happens anytime you have a complete and total collapse. You know, it might be 6 weeks before people were eating each other in LA and New York and Chicago, but then in the more rural areas, that might be something that never happened because they were able to sort of spin up food production and not have to resort to those measures. But you know, that's something that happened in the Book of Kings and in the Bible, and it's something that's happened in Europe after World War I, and it's something that you don't even read about in a lot of apocalyptic books, because it's something that we don't even want to write about, much less read about. So, but it's something that happens, and it's a reality, and it's one of those factors that shows how intensity of a collapse is going to be very different depending on how populated of an area you're in.
Very, very true. I agree with, you know, what you're saying there as far as the intensity goes. Now, you brought up faith a couple of different times. People on the podcast know that I'm a person of faith. I don't shy away from talking about my faith. In all of your books, eventually there is a time, you know, this crisis brings on this time where people start turning towards God. I mean, you've got people that are turning, you know, they never turn to God. They turn to their own selves and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, a lot of the times your characters, they turn towards God. Why do you think that is?
well, there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole, and most every post-apocalyptic situation you could throw at somebody is sort of they're going to be their equivalent of a foxhole, where they're just getting shelled with stuff that, and they don't know if they're going to be alive and half an hour later. So I think that's realistic, and I think that there will be a large amount of people that have never thought about God, and they've allowed their minds to be completely clouded out by the deception of wealth and the worries and cares of this world, Christians included, that haven't really given it a lot of given the Lord his due and put the time and effort to get to know him, that are going to wake up when they see that, hey, I might not have as long as I think on this earth. And I think that that's going to be a big wake up call for a lot of people.
And definitely that hope, you know, that hope that the Lord brings and puts inside of your heart, to where you start realizing, you know what, this world is not all there is. Uh-huh. There's more. You know, when we breathe our last, when we close our eyes, when our brain fires one last time, there's something more, you know. And I just think that's so important. There's so many, I think, you know, because I talk about faith openly, I get to hear from a lot of preppers who are Christians. And that is one of the things, you know, it's a driving force in what we do. We realize that we need to prepare because, you know, crisis can happen at any time. But the most important thing is that spiritual preparedness and putting that in place and making sure that that's right. Because you could lose your life here, but, you know, you still gain everything, you know, in eternity, you know. And so I appreciate that you write that way in your books. Now, let me come full circle, because we started out on the podcast talking about your daughter. And so I want to kind of end it here with this question. Being a father now, how important is preparedness to you? What has changed, and has it intensified for you?
It's absolutely intensified. And to just go, and this kind of ties in with the same thing, because, you know, I everything I do for her, I do with the understanding of this is a gift that God's put in my life, and I want to honor him, and I want to train her up to show her how to live a life that honors God. But in entertainment, there's very, very few choices for Christians, and I write these books from the standpoint of an assumption of, you know, this is how we live our life. My wife and I, we go to church, we read the Bible to our child, we pray before meals, we live our lives before God. You know, we live our lives as if we're going to have to give an account for him, for the way we've lived our lives. And this informs every decision that we make throughout our lives, whether it's how we write our checks, it defines how we manage debt. We do all of this stuff according to the principles that we've gleaned from reading the Bible. And when you look at modern entertainment today, whether it's Netflix or Prime Video or CBS or Fox, or any of the Hollywood movies out there, all of the television shows and most of the books, they all act like there's absolutely no God. Nobody on the planet believes there's a God. Nobody goes to church. Nobody prays. Nobody reads their Bible. And God is not thought of by any of the characters in any of these shows or any of these means of entertainment. And that's just not us, and it doesn't represent us. And so there's very, very little representation of our culture and our values in entertainment. And so I want to provide that for people that live their lives the way we do, because we go to church with people that think like we think, that believe what we believe, that live their lives the way we live. And we talk to people, and I know we're not the only ones. There are other people out there that that what they learn from the Bible dictates how they live their life. And it's actually a bigger part of the population than people think. And it's certainly a much bigger portion of the population than is represented by the entertainment industry as a whole. So, one of the things I try to do is to represent our culture in that as well.
I don't want to interrupt you, but, you know, along those lines, I know Jan Markell had a podcast not too long ago where she talked about that, where she felt she's hearing from people, Christians, that feel like they're all alone, that they're all by themselves, that they have, you know, there's no one else around. But it's that perception, because everything that gets thrown at you is, this is the way it is, this is the way it is. But like you said, there are a lot of Christians out there, because we hear from them. I know you hear from them. I hear from them as well, like feeling like sometimes you're alone. Not only are you alone in the idea of being prepared, but you feel like you're alone in your faith. But there's more people than you realize that are out there. And that's evident because how popular your books are, man. And so it's really good to hear you say that. So, you know, that's one of the things, I guess, from what I'm hearing you say, is you're wanting to write and you're wanting to provide this because you have a daughter that's you're raising, and you want her to have some options, some Christian options, you know, to be able to read and experience some entertainment. So different than what the world has.
Yeah. And I want to write stories that show this is normal. You know, we're not abnormal. We're not weird. You know, this is normal. And even when it becomes abnormal, we're still going to do it because we're not living for this world.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's very well said. Very well said. All right. So I'm looking at Amazon, Cyber Armageddon, Rise of the Locust. It has 140 five-star reviews right now, man. So if you haven't got the book, you got to go get it. You can get it in Kindle, audiobook, and paperback. But for the listeners who, because like I said, I've been talking about your book now for a while. I was very lucky to have like a week where I was able to just kind of plow through and listen to it, big chunks at a time. So throw us a bone for Cyber Armageddon Book 2. Give us a little teaser to get us prepared for that book.
Yeah, so Kate has survived the catastrophic collapse of the entire banking system due to this computer virus that's infected all of the banks around the country. Turns out that they've infected everything in the world, so it's global. The government, as they do, they come out with a solution, but it's a very, very short-lived solution. And we find out that there's another wave of computer viruses that's going to be striking at U.S. infrastructure, and they're going to go from the proverbial frying pan into the fire. So it's only going to get tougher from Kate. I would never want to be a character in any of my books.
Me neither, man.
They don't have an easy time of it, those poor souls. And it should be out in the middle of March.
March, okay. So that's not too far away.
Right.
Book 3
should be out this summer. So trying to not make folks wait too long for those.
Awesome. Yeah, I love the person you have reading, you know, for Ava, the series on Ava, and then on this one again. Are you ever going to go back to, is it Kevin Pierce?
Yes, yeah. Okay. He'll be the series that'll be coming out either late this in 2019 or early 2020 will be read by Kevin Pierce and for the audiobooks, and it will be a male protagonist. And I'm going to be revisiting one of the themes that's so near and dear to my heart, which is the economic vulnerabilities of America. That's kind of the thing that got me started prepping. I think it's the one threat that is absolutely baked in. I think the only way we could possibly avoid a complete and total economic meltdown in this country at some point is for it to be circumvented by something else like a CME, EMP, or massive cyber attack. So the only things that could save us from an economic collapse are probably far worse than the collapse itself. So it's not good. And so I'll be revisiting that theme for that book and that series will be called Black Swan.
We'll be looking forward to that one too. So if someone wants to connect with you, of course they can purchase all your books on Amazon, Audible, but if they wanted to connect with you in Prepper Recon, where would they go?
Yep, go to PrepperRecon.com, and like I said, if you've never started prepping, or if you're not real sure about if you've got everything in place that you need to, or if you're having a little trouble prioritizing, because like you said, sometimes when you wake up to this stuff, it's just so overwhelming, and you just don't know where to start. And what a lot of people do is they just walk away from it altogether because they think that I could never do that. There's too many things to do. PrepperRecon.com, like I mentioned earlier, the very top of the homepage is a banner that says, click here for your free PDF, and click that, fill out your email in that, and I'll email you a free copy of the 7-Step Survival Plan. And what that does is it gives you little baby steps to get a little bit more prepared today than you were yesterday. And it does it, and it prioritizes things so that you don't run out ahead and get yourself in trouble in one area without first getting the basics squared away. One of the first things I'll talk about in that book is making sure that you're spiritually prepared, because this is going to be a very catastrophic thing that a lot of folks are just not going to be able to deal with it emotionally if they don't have their heart right with God and they don't have that secure relationship with their Creator. The other thing that I'll talk about in there is, are you physically in shape? Because if you can't get off the couch, you know, you don't have too much of a chance of surviving the apocalypse. You know, every year, every winter, we have people that are killing over dead because they get out and they have a big snowstorm, and they either have to shovel snow off their roof because the weight of the snow is going to cave in their roof if they don't shovel it off, or just shovel in the driveway so they can get out of the driveway, and they kill over and have heart attacks because they haven't done anything except sit on the couch and eat potato chips since last winter. And so now they're just not in the shape for that type of manual labor. And the apocalypse is going to have a lot of manual labor, and it's going to be very intense. So you need to be physically fit for that. And then you're going to need the skills, so you need to be mentally fit. And then after you take care of all of that, you want to make sure that you got your finances in order, because like I said, the number one threat I think we're facing right now is financial. And the best way you can hedge yourself for that is to have your own financial house in order. And then once we get all that stuff out of the way, then we can start talking about all the sexy prepper stuff, the beans, the bullets, and the Band-Aids. And then we get into all of that. And like I said, we try to keep it prioritized and try to keep it all reasonable and do it with common sense. So I do hope folks will go over there. Once again, PrepperRecon.com. Sign up for that for free, and I'd love to send it to you.
Awesome. Awesome. A lot of great things. So that is over at PrepperRecon.com. That's the top banner. Click on that and subscribe, and you'll get the ebook, right? Is that correct?
Correct.
Awesome. All right. Well, Mark, thanks so much for coming on the podcast and sharing a little bit about cybersecurity with us and freaking us all out a little bit more than we already are. But we do appreciate it, and we appreciate what you're doing out there for the preparedness community.
Todd, thanks again so much for having me.
All right, man. God bless.